joining Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Laura. Well, we'll have another of our interviews with candidates for the Congressional District 15 tomorrow at 11, but today we'll hear from a surrogate of President Trump's campaign on the question of health care. At the end of June, the president's campaign sent out a press release to the media saying that Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden's proposal of a public option to compete with private health insurance companies could destroy private health care plans. And our guest says that that would be a bad thing. Our guest is Dr. Nan Haworth. Haworth is an ophthalmologist and former congresswoman from New York's 19th congressional district. She's a Republican. She was elected to Congress in 2010. And in 2012, after redistricting, Haworth ran for re-election but lost to a former Clinton White House staffer. She's a graduate of the Cornell University Medical School. And Nan Haworth, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Rob. Glad to be with you.
So I hope you're healthy, and I hope everything's good where you are, and your family's okay.
Thank you. My husband runs the single largest independent medical group in the country, interestingly enough, here in New York Metro. And fortunately, those practices and hospitals that prepared well here in New York, something of the epicenter for quite some time, have weathered it. Weathered the challenge hearteningly. So glad to be able to say that.
All right. Well, that's great news. So tell us why the public option is a bad idea.
You know, Rob, the problem with government, particularly the federal government, let's leave it at that. What states want to do for themselves is a different issue. But the federal government taking a major role in health insurance is fraught with all kinds of problems. And one of the biggest ones is that we really do get less opportunity to control what we pay for health care, what we pay for health insurance, and the kind of care that we can choose for ourselves. So the fundamental principle is that putting the federal government in charge of health insurance takes power away from us and makes the insurance more costly.
So how does the federal government, by getting more involved, how does it take away our power? What power do we have if we don't have the federal government involved?
Well, you know, the biggest power we have is to have consumer choice. Look, you know, Rob, as you mentioned, I've served in Congress, so I've seen some of those machinations from the inside. And what happens, and what happened with the Affordable Care Act, is that the big players in healthcare, who do have, you know, lots of lobbying dollars, they're not the only ones. AARP is also, you know, very well resourced. But AARP, quite honestly, and of course, you know, we all think of AARP and think of Medicare, but AARP is, in large measure, a marketer of insurance plans. But in any case, these big players, you know, all get their piece of the pie with taxpayers and premium dollar payers put on the hook for that. You know, they like to see options limited for consumers to what they think would be best. And, you know, unfortunately, we've seen that play out in skyrocketing premiums for the folks who, under the terms of the Affordable Care Act, didn't qualify for any sort of premium support. You know, these folks are really paying a very heavy price, and it's been very hard on a lot of Americans unnecessarily, and that's just because of government dictates.
Mm. So your idea would be to have more consumer choices, and then the consumers could read the plans and then decide for themselves what the best healthcare insurance option is for them.
Well, for example, right, and this has worked in places like the state of Indiana for folks who receive Medicaid. And Indiana offers a plan on which both Medicaid beneficiaries and state government employees can have their own health savings accounts, can choose from a variety of plans and options that may best suit their needs, depending on what the conditions in their lives and their families are. And this has been studied and has been found to work very well. When you treat people with respect for making their own choices and give them the resources or allow them to have in the form of, let's say, health savings accounts that they can fund, they will make good choices. It's an artificial barrier, a series of artificial barriers that we created for Americans in terms of having personal, portable health care, when at the end of World War II, in order, frankly, to, evade certain forms of taxation, health care benefits were, declared an employer option to provide as a benefit, and it's great to have employers participate in the conferring of benefits for employees, obviously. But the fact that we have become so dependent on being linked to one employer to get our insurance really penalizes a lot of other Americans, including small businesses. So there's just all kinds of reasons why we could make this so much more rational, so much more sensible, and so much more cost-effective if we empowered Americans as consumers.
All right. So if we empower Americans as consumers and we have our choices of health care plans, it would be up to us to read the health care plan and then, based on what the health care plan says, that we would buy the right one. Our guest is Dr. Dan Hayworth. She is a former Republican Congresswoman from New York State. She's a graduate of the Cornell University Medical School. She's an ophthalmologist, and today she is acting as a surrogate for the Donald Trump campaign here on WMNF. Nan, I pulled out my health insurance policy yesterday just to prepare for this interview.
That is pretty complicated.
It's 87 pages long, single-spaced. Yeah. And let me just read, I can't read the whole thing, but let me just read a few sentences from it. This is the section called Claims Processing Edits. Payment of covered expenses for services rendered by a provider is also subject to our claims processing edits as determined by us. The amount determined to be payable after we apply our claims processing edits depends on the existence and interaction of several factors. Because the mix of these factors may be different for every claim, the amount paid for a covered expense may vary depending on the circumstances. Accordingly, it is not feasible to provide an exhaustive description of the claims processing edits that will be used to determine the amount payable for a covered expense. But examples of the most commonly used factors are the intensity and complexity of service, whether a service is one of multiple services performed during the same service session, such that the cost of the service to the provider is less than if the service had been provided in a separate service session. And this goes on for 87 pages. That's the way it reads, Nan.
Rob, I could not agree more with you. And, what you're reading to us is basically, yes, you know what? We've put the insurance industry in charge of basically, what they're telling you is we can pay whatever we decide. It's at our fiat to decide, what we're going to pay for these claims or not, and leave it up to you to fight it out with us.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, but I was going to say, Rob, I've dealt with Medicare as well as a provider, I haven't practiced since 2005. I retired from practice in 2005, which had nothing to do with politics. I had two kids at home who needed more of me, but I remember dealing with frankly, a lot of the arbitrariness of Medicare as well. And the artificial constraints. And in fact, what's been wonderful is that the Trump administration, during the COVID crisis, has actually released a lot of those artificial constraints that, for example, prevented people from being able to have a telemedicine visit with their doctor. Medicare put all kinds of constraints on that and made it financially, unfortunately, unrealistic for doctors to provide that kind of care to folks who are Medicare beneficiaries. And really, it was completely arbitrary. So removing some of the strictures that unfortunately are all too easy to place on these things when government is in charge has actually helped to increase access more affordably, and it's been spurred by the COVID crisis, and we can go so much further with that. That's the issue, Bob. It's not correct to imagine that somehow putting all of our health insurance and all of our health care in the hands of the federal government would make things better and make things work better for us. That's a government that can say yes to things is also a government that can say no, and I've definitely seen that happen too.
Nan, the problem, and you mentioned this a moment ago, the insurance companies do have a lot of power in Washington, D.C. Yes. They help write the rules. It's not so much the federal government that's in charge. It's the insurance companies with their vast number of lobbyists who influence Congress.
Well,
and I'm not disparaging your term in Congress, but, you know, it's the insurance companies that control our federal government on the issue of health care.
You'd be very interested. It's not just the insurance companies. It's also, the hospitals have a big say. The farm industry has a big say. And the bigger, when you're dealing with the federal government especially, the bigger the entity, the bigger you are as a player, the more of a voice you're going to have in the way legislation is written and the way regulations are carried out. And unfortunately, the folks who get hurt are the smaller players, like small businesses. More Americans are employed, and especially women, very interesting. We look at ways in which women have been disadvantaged, and even you can talk about, members of racial and ethnic minorities. A lot of these folks, a lot of us, and I'm a woman, of course, and I have my own small business, are in small businesses. Small businesses are at a disadvantage because of federal health care insurance regulations, forgive me, and tax policy relative to big businesses. And the only reason that's the case, the only reason tax policy penalizes smaller players is because bigger players are seeking rent, and they get them.
Well, we're talking with a surrogate for President Trump's campaign. She is former Congresswoman Dr. Nan Haworth. She's an ophthalmologist by training, and this is WMNF in Tampa. So, Nan, when the president, just a few months after taking office, said that I'm going to do away with Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and I'm going to make it so that premiums are lower and that everybody's covered and your expenses will be lower. There won't be deductibles and that sort of thing. And I thought, wow, the president is going for a single-payer plan just like they have in Canada, because that sounds like the Canadian plan.
Well, but the Canadian plan, about which I will readily confess I am not an expert, but look, we know that access to services in Canada has been more of a challenge than it is for the most part, in the United States. And that's because when you try to have, Hayek was right about the fatal conceit of taking power away from government, from markets, from us, basically, from we the people, take it away from us the people and give it to the government. They will go into their planning mode, and when they do, they don't have perfect information. They don't have perfect judgment. Consumers have less of a voice. It's not that there's no voice, Bob, but it is definitely, it's attenuated. Responsibility is attenuated. When we have markets, when we have, when those who are charging us for an x-ray, and I actually have a little place in Bonita Springs, and I took my dad there a few years ago when we were there, to get an ear infection taken care of. And they actually posted, here are your out-of-pocket prices for services that we commonly render. And I think chest x-ray was something like, and I can't remember the exact figure, but it's something very reasonable, something like $50 and you could just pay right there, as opposed to, you know, the complicated and arcane billing that you just described in reading your own insurance policy, that results in no one really knowing what the actual value is and the actual cost is of even the simplest services, because there is so much obfuscation involved in trying to keep certain profit margins for the big players.
Yeah. Well, healthcare is certainly an important issue. I was looking at the Morning Consult website, and they say that 55% of voters in the U.S. support Medicare for All. That's the mm-hmm. highest level since 2019, when 54% backed the plan. If you look at if you ask people whether or not they support Medicare for All, single payer, Democrats, to some extent, about 80%. Independents, 61%. Even 24% of Republicans support single-payer. The public option where we started, every group, Democrats, independents, supports the public option. The Republicans are less enthusiastic. Their numbers are in the 40s or 50s for the public option. But this is what I don't understand. In Canada, according to Johns Hopkins University, they spend $4,753 per person on health care. In the U.S., according to Johns Hopkins, we spend $9,892 per person on health care, and we still have 30 million Americans who are uncovered. So so why would continuing with the private insurance system, why would that help us as Americans?
It's not. We have the worst of both worlds, in a sense, right now, Rob, and I'm not going to defend the system that we have. I want to make it a lot better, but I want to make it consumer-oriented, and it can be done. Government systems are not consumer-oriented. And if you need proof of that, just look at the dismal failures of the VA. That is government-controlled health care. And in fairness to President Trump, he has worked on serious reforms for the VA, and I worked with veterans, and I worked in the VA. When I was a resident, I trained in the VA, and I saw the inefficiencies. I saw what happens when bureaucracies are put in charge. The reason in Canada government health care, quote, works is because Canadians may have and probably do have less expectation of their health care system than Americans do. We are, rightly, and that's okay. We are the most vigorous consumers in the world. We expect more, we want more, and we don't want to, you know, wait for our care, and you know, those are all things that can be accommodated. But right now, if you look at, aside from the failings of the VA, if you look at Medicare, unfortunately, that, you know, Medicare is not a fiscally rational model for insurance. It's not like, well, you know, Medicare works. It doesn't really work. It, you know, the dollars that we put away in our paycheck to pay for our eventual health insurance and health care are on average only a third of what is actually spent. Now, again, you know, we can make everything more efficient and more effective, and we do need to do that. But everybody should understand that the average Medicare beneficiary goes through those dollars, way before, and that's fine. Thank God. You know, we live a lot longer than we did when Medicare first became the law. But you know, the folks paying for Medicare are.
I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm trying to figure out what that number is. My understanding of the cost of Medicare overhead is it's only about 2%, and the rest goes to providing service, whereas in the private insurance industry, the overhead costs and the bureaucracy costs is somewhere between 8 and 25%, depending on the system that you're in. Drill down deeper. Why you're saying that Medicare dollars are wasted? Tell us more about that.
No, I'm not saying. I mean, look, we could stand to have a lot better value for money in our health care, Rob. There's no question, and that's because we have this unholy hybrid between, basically industries that we know, especially, look, you know, the health insurance industry, it's a big industry. AARP is a big part of that. So, you know, when we talk about Medicare's nominal expenses being relatively low, that's because basically, you know, the Medicare contracts out to big insurers to administer and to provide the reimbursements to payers for Medicare programs. So when you look at the massive overhead, relatively speaking, that industry has, you know, when we pay for the Medicare system, you know, part of what we're paying for is that overhead among the insurers that to whom Medicare contracts out. So the ultimate fact of the matter is that Medicare itself is not the panacea that, you know, folks may understandably think that it is, because, you know, Medicare does look good once you're a Medicare beneficiary. But from the other side of the equation, that's being paid for. Those Medicare, you know, folks tend to think that, well, you know, I put my payroll, you know, withholding away, and then it goes to Medicare or Social Security, you know, because obviously it's two streams. But in fact, in both those cases, what we're paying in withholding doesn't reveal the real cost of actually spending.
Is that an argument for doing away with the privatized portion of Medicare?
No, it's an argument for reforming the way we approach health insurance in general to give consumers more opportunity to choose what they need.
But Nan, if I have to read, I'm sorry I'm interrupting, but if I have to read that 89-page gobbledygook, and I read you just three or four sentences from it that I didn't understand, I can't read 89 pages of that and understand it, and then go through multiple insurance company contracts and read every one of those and then decide what's best for me. It's impossible.
No, you're right. Yeah. And Rob, one of the reasons that exists and persists is because there is so little transparency about what they're doing. When insurers are more directly accountable to consumers, then the quality of information that they give you, the quality of service that they give you, has to improve. Because they, you know, if there's a competitive marketplace that truly is fair to consumers, and isn't artificially subsidized by you as premium payers and by taxpayers, you know, the more control we hand to consumers who are actually paying and understand what they're paying for, the better value they get. It's a long process, Rob. I'm not saying that it's something that, you know, I wish it were something that we could do overnight.
President Trump promised by the end of his first term he would do something.
Well, he did, and it was an appropriate goal for him. And in fact, he has made remarkable strides toward empowering consumers, empowering people to have more selection among the plan options they choose when they have health savings accounts, the option of having telemedicine, the option of having private arrangements with their doctors, if they have Medicare. Now they can have concierge care and use their Medicare plan dollars to pay for that. That was something that the government prior to President Trump had forbidden. Why? Because the insurers didn't like losing control.
Nan, I want to ask you one last question, and thank you so much for being on the program and talking about healthcare. But is there a country around the world? I mean, so many other countries are able to provide health insurance at a low cost to all of their citizens. We're not able to do that. Is there a model around the world that you would point to say President Trump is headed in that direction?
You know, I had an interesting visit to the Czech Republic not too long ago, a couple of years ago, and they had an interesting combination, and Germany does as well, of, you know, a certain amount of government-backed safety net. Now, I would argue that should be at the state level rather than at the federal level, because the federal government just simply doesn't do, in our country, doesn't do everything it should do as well as it should. We've given it too much to do, but they had, you know, there was a combination of a certain amount of, you know, government-backed services with an extensive marketplace of private options. And it was all done at a reasonably low cost, which was really nice to hear about.
And in Germany,
we have in the United States, though, Rob, the challenge we have is that we are a very diverse and distinctly demanding set of consumers. So Americans are unique around the world, or unique in all the world in terms of our level of perhaps of expectation, yes, and not an inconsiderable factor. Also, you know, we have a much more vigorous liability industry than in any other part of the world, and that does play into healthcare costs. So significant liability reforms would really be a great idea, still protecting consumers, but there would be definitely better ways of, like, let's say, to have administrative courts that adjudicate malpractice suits instead of the tort system that we have now.
Well,
there are lots of things that we could do to make our marketplace more rational.
And in Germany, that marketplace, at least for insurance, is heavily regulated. There are massive restrictions on what insurance companies can do, unlike what we have here in the U.S.
Which, you know, and again, we know history tells us, Rob, that when consumers are more empowered, costs decline, quality improves because we have competition in markets. The VA system proves that there are many, many, unfortunately, flaws and failings and pitfalls, at least in our country. And, you know, part of it certainly has to do with the way we manage the government workforce as well. In terms of, unfortunately, unionization of the government workforce has meant that, you know, it becomes very, very difficult to enforce certain types of quality controls on the way our employees provide services as well.
All right. Well,
count me a skeptic.
Okay.
You know,
I'm
for consumer empowerment. If you go to the Goodman Institute for Public Policy Research website, by the way, John Goodman, the father of health savings accounts, has great instructional materials for those of us who want to be informed consumers and understand the great liberating value in terms of quality and cost of giving markets more power in our healthcare and our health insurance.
Well, Nan Hayworth, thank you so much for coming on WMNF and explaining the president's side of the healthcare debate. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rob.
It's great to have you here. Thanks, Nan.
And you.
All right. Bye-bye. Dr. Nan Hayworth was standing in for the Trump campaign there. She's a former congresswoman from New York. She's a Republican. She was elected to Congress for one term in 2010. And let's take some phone calls. What do you think about this debate over health care? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. What did you think? I read a little bit of my health care plan, and just it was probably less than 0.5% of my health care plan. I didn't understand it. As I read it about six times yesterday, the morning consult says that 55% of voters support Medicare for All. From February to March, net support for single-payer health care, Medicare for All, jumped from 11 to 20 points in this country. And as I mentioned before, Canada, which has single-payer provided by its provinces, spends less than half of what we spend on health care here in the U.S., and everybody in Canada is covered. There are no copays, no deductibles. What do you think? We've got a lot of emails. I'll try to read as many as I can, but let's take some phone calls right now and hear the voice of the listeners. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Kurt in Lakeland. Kurt, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Rob, thank you for that interview. I think that your interviewee was the most disassociated consumer of healthcare that I've ever heard. I work in the healthcare industry. I understand billing practices. And I'll give you a quick example of myself. So I had surgery last year, and that surgery, I have private insurance. And so with private insurance, I pay for that insurance, and I still had to have And I'm pulling strings with my friends to get into appointments. And so with that in mind, I'm also more educated in terms of what my health care plan is. And I agree with you that the legalese is what really separates us and disenfranchises the consumer rather than empowers. But in my own particular case, what ended up happening was I had a pre-authorization period, which was that this, which could be up to 2 months. And so this idea that Canada's healthcare system doesn't work as it rations healthcare, in healthcare on a daily basis through this private insurance model that we pay for. Whereas if I had Medicare, I would have clearly met the indications for surgery and clearly had no pre-authorization required. And I mean, that's one of the things that happens with insurance. Again, I just think that if we had to ask the representative again what her last elective procedure was, I would, A, want to find out what insurance she has, and B, if it was covered under that health plan, if she had a private insurance, and B, was there a pre-authorization period? Because, again, that's just a private, that pre-authorization period is just a time where insurances can collect money and, again, put off your surgery, and they can also decline the surgery in the end. Again, I would, if I could yell at the phone, I would, if it made any difference, I would do so now, but it won't do any good.
All right, yeah, yelling doesn't do any good, but conversation does. Kurt, thanks a lot. Thank you. All right. What do you think of what the guest had to say? And have you had an experience in the U.S. where you had a hard time getting into a doctor? I've got stories I could tell you. I'm not going to tell you my stories, but Rick writes this regarding the public option. Rick says, why haven't public colleges ruined private colleges? He says, why are private schools increasing in number while we have public schools, writes Rick. And then this person says, without the ACA, I wouldn't have been able to have cancer surgery last month. No one can afford health insurance if they don't have a company plan or are not indigent, writes Rob. And then this person says, right out of the gate, this poor woman just regurgitated right-wing propaganda, promoting feelings over facts, pretending premiums shot up after the ACA, and focusing on the exceptions rather than the success of programs like the ACA. That's from an unsigned email from the 239 area code. Kevin writes this, how do unemployed people have money for a health savings account? Or how do low-wage earners afford to put money they don't have into a health savings account? That is the billion-dollar question, Kevin. Thank you for asking it. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. And let's go to John in Port Richey. John, thank you for calling. What's up?
Several points there on the comment, on the guest comments that they made. She said that a well-informed consumer will be a better consumer. And I just challenge people to go out and try to shop around and see what it costs for various operations. And you'll find that the healthcare company makes it very difficult to nail down all those costs so you can actually do a comparison. But going back to something where she said that the, under a private healthcare system, the choices would be less than a public healthcare system. And my question there is, what's the difference whether a public healthcare or a private healthcare system says, I can only see Dr. A, B, or C because they're within their healthcare plan, or the federal government saying, I can see A, B, and C? It seems to me that if it's a single payer, all the people are getting paid by the same person, I would have more choices because the check's coming from one person. The second part, she said that there's limited healthcare access to Canadians. And I'm sure there are some where they have to have a surgery or something, and it might take them a while. But I looked it up, and there's 44 million Americans that have no health insurance, which means they have absolutely zero access to health care, let alone a delayed access. And the whole population of Canada is approximately 39 million. So really, there are way more Americans that have no access or less access to health care than Canadians. That just boggle my brain.
All right, John, thanks a lot. Thank you, John. And Karen backs up what John just said. Karen writes in to say, we choose and the government pays, question mark, because now I have an employee-based healthcare plan and I work for the insurance industry, and I can tell you that my choices right now are limited. And Karen also works in Medicare. So John's point is a good one, is that when we choose our healthcare plan here at work, We sit around and we look at the list of doctors that are available or that work under that healthcare plan, and that's how we decide what healthcare plan to use. But why shouldn't there be a universal health insurance system that is accepted by all doctors, and you can have your choice of doctors, choice of hospitals, choice of walk-in clinics? 813-239-9663 is our phone number. And let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to Teresa in St. Pete. Hi, Teresa, you're on M&F. What's up?
First, I used to go to church with Canadians, the church I used to go to years ago, and they said they would never, ever, ever take our system over theirs. They said it wasn't perfect, but it was far better than what we got. And second, I didn't have, when I first went on the Affordable Care Act, I got to keep my doctor. Well, last year, my doctor dropped all the marketplace insurances. He doesn't take any of them anymore. So I had to search and find one, and I got a list from my insurance company. The navigators I used through the Affordable Care Act, and it took me about 10 before I finally found one that was I was able to get. So it's a nightmare out there, and you know,
it is. Crazy. Teresa, have you ever had experience where you tried to get an appointment with a doctor and had to wait 3 weeks or a month or
a month
and a half?
Yeah. It's always like, well, we gotta, It's like you make an appointment, and then you're like, okay, yeah, you always wait. You always wait unless you got an emergency.
Yeah, unless you're in the emergency room.
And lately I need a colonoscopy, and I can't find the doctors they recommended. None of them take my insurance. I've called about three, and now, so now I'm trying to search for it. And I'm just like, what the heck? And, these Republicans, they just, they don't care. They just, if you can't afford insurance, they just assume you die.
All right. Teresa, thanks a lot. Let's hear from some of our Republican friends. Jack in Ellenton says the mandate was a horrible idea. Americans hate to be told to do anything. Why not use the pre-existing coverage benefit as a carrot? For example, after a future reset date, if you do not have insurance, you can be denied coverage for pre-existing conditions until you've held insurance for 24 consecutive months. That's a Jack in Ellenton's idea. And our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org if you want to comment about the healthcare conversation we're having. And let's go to Rob in Thanodosassa. Hi, Rob, you're on M&F.
Hey, Rob. I admire the equanimity with which you're able to deal with some of these guests. It would take a Valium drip for me to stay calm with this woman's boilerplate responses. But, man, it's like I have, I sent that text. I'm sorry to call. I had two things. My mother, the system is so punitive. It's like either you have really great insurance or you plan way down the line, especially if you're older, like with my mom. My dad, he worked really hard, denied himself a lot, and managed to save up a little money so that when he passed, she could live a good life and down the road pass on some to his children, And sure enough, she got ill. She was on Medicare, but then once she got over to Medicaid and they covered the nursing home thing, they take all of your money. And it's the same with anyone else. If you don't have a full-time job and you have, insurance that your company buys, or unless you just make a heck of a lot of money as a private entrepreneur, most people cannot afford insurance because it's like over $800 or so a month. Now, people get to get over age like 45, 50, 55, they don't qualify for Medicare, but, a lot of times you can't get that full-time job because employers, it's ageism, they don't want to hire an older person. And what it is, if you do happen to have a little money to qualify for Medicaid, you've got to spend it down to next to nothing. So it's like very punitive. Now, I managed to get Obamacare, and thank God, because I was diagnosed with a form of cancer. It was very treatable, and I did have surgery last month. I had two procedures, that and a hernia, and I had them doubled up at the same time. And I thank God that I had Obamacare, because if I had not, no doctor would even see me. They're not going to even give you the treatment. And otherwise, I just basically have to pay out of pocket, and then I'd be indigent, So it's a really screwed up system, and it needs to be fixed so that, there are so many holes in it, and it's so punitive to people who don't fall in this nice golden zone where if you're an ophthalmologist or you're somebody with a nice 40-hour a week job where you're, you know, your company's paying like 80% or 90% of the premiums, you're fine. But otherwise, you know, it's a real, it's kind of really scary.
Yeah, it is. All right. Well, I'm glad everything turned out okay with the surgery, Rob. Thank you.
It did.
All right.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you. We're talking about healthcare, and on the first half of today's program, we had a surrogate from the Trump campaign who said that there should be more competition and private insurance options in the country. She was against a public option and certainly not a fan of the single-payer system that's in Canada. So we're taking your comments about that interview. Jan writes this, I'm so tired of my employee-provided health care, so tired of paying for insurance. I want my taxes to pay for my health care. I want what the rest of the civilized world has. I want health care for all of us. We pay every week out of our paychecks, and then we have a $40 copay, and then more when we go to the doctor or the emergency room. That's $2,000 after the insurance is paid. Our system is the worst in the world. I feel completely powerless. I could go on, writes Jan. All right, you're listening to 88.5 FM. Let's go to Karen in Dunedin. Karen, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey there. I do want to clarify, Medicare patients do require an auth for procedures. They may not take as long. I do know that because I actually work in appeals. And if he knows a company that's paying 80% of somebody's premiums, I'd like to go work for them because I work for the insurance company and I pay a lot and then I have a huge deductible. Now, they do contribute to my HSA for me and that takes care of my chiropractic business and that's about it because my chiropractor is out of network. But your Medicare plans, you have the option of going with all doctors are in network or an HMO. You get the same choices. So what she was saying just doesn't fly. They just want to, put more money in the pockets of the insurance companies. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. All right. Karen, thanks a lot. Thanks for your comments. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Michael writes, this, it is ironic that an ophthalmologist can't see what's right in front of her face, writes Michael. That's Michael's opinion. Deborah writes this, what does your guest think about insurance companies denying care for pre-existing conditions? I also am a cancer survivor who has Medicare Plus, a supplement, so all of my medical expenses were covered. There was a woman in the same cancer center, though, who had to sell her car to get chemo to save her life. This is incredibly cruel and should be unacceptable in a civilized nation. We need universal single-payer health care that covers everyone, cradle to grave, as every other Western nation has in place, writes Deborah in Spring Hill. We're talking about people's experience with health care after our interview with the surrogate for the Trump campaign right here on 88.5 FM. Let's go to Ron in West Tampa. Ron, what's up?
Hey, what's up? Well, very interesting interview. If I could have, I would have loved to pick her brain on how she foresaw, and I'm paraphrasing, the accountability of private health insurance. I find it, forgive me, laughable that she would say there's got to be more accountability and they will be more accountable. I can point to several situations, one that just happened to me in the last couple of weeks where my employee provided, and I'm lucky to have it, but my private health insurance company, and they're, I'm going to say United Healthcare, they decided for me how much of a prescription I should get per month. They didn't ever come back to me and say, oh, we decided because of our parameters that you should get only so much of this medication per month. They just gave it to me and charged me, granted, a lower rate than I would have paid purely on the private industry side. But that's just one example. And when it comes to Medicare, what they did for my mom, God rest her soul, if they hadn't been there for me, I would be paying until I was 90 for the bills and the expenses, Rob, that she accrued because of the so-called care she got. And then I could talk about my father, who was in the VA back in the late 70s, and the dollar amount that it cost for his care over 5 months went into the low $100,000 range back then. So I'm just saying my two cents, my experience.
For the VA. So, but he didn't have to pay that, though, did he?
No.
That was all free. Free to him.
Free to him, yeah, because he was a veteran. His injuries weren't service-related, but he'd been an active member of the Navy during World War II. So regardless, you know, he served in the military. So it didn't cost him or us a dime. And I'm eternally grateful, despite the flaws and despite the issues. And I know we could debate it, but those are the two things when I think about what, Medicare and public health care in the so-called government world has done for my family. Forget about it.
Yeah, and when you talk about your mom going to the hospital, and thankfully she had insurance covering it, Medicare insurance, I think about, you know, there was a time years ago that I was in the hospital, and I came out, and I paid the main bill, then I paid another bill, then weeks later, months later, I got another bill, right. And then they sent it to a collection agency because I thought, you know, after a few weeks, I thought, okay, I'm done paying the bills for this surgery. And no, the right. bills kept coming from mysterious people who I didn't know. I wasn't sure I had met them, wasn't sure what they had provided, but there was no end to it. And you have no choice but to pay it. Otherwise, they're going to, have some collection person start hounding you.
Hounding you, right. And if it wasn't for Medicare, after my mother had to go back into an assisted living facility, I'll say, that bill, which was not covered, would have cost me alone about $70,000 or $80,000. But thank God for them, Medicare came along and helped me, and they whittled that down to $400. I'll never forget it, and I'll be forever grateful. That's just my two cents, Rob.
All right, Ron, thanks a lot. 813-239-9663. This person is anonymous and says, access to elective services in Canada is different. They wait less time waiting for essential services than we do. Love how she's pretending that the Republican approach will reduce confusing insurance plans and benefit the people rather than benefiting the corporations. Does she actually believe that, or is she lying, writes anonymous. Let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to Mark in Lakeland. Mark, thank you for calling. What are your thoughts?
Hey, Rob. Well, when I talk to some of my friends on the right-hand side who are over 65, I offer to take their, and who don't like single-payer health care, I offer to revert back to the 60s and take their Medicare card and take it outside and burn it.
What do they say?
They say, well, that's not single-payer health care. Oh, really? Okay. And then the other issue is, I think if we want to reduce drug costs, we might think about curtailing or even banning drug commercials. I mean, how many people can possibly have plaque psoriasis?
I know. Every time I turn on the TV. And the exactly. side effects, too. Whoa.
My God, yeah, I'd rather have the plaque psoriasis.
Right, exactly. So, Mark, what do you think?
That's my comment.
Mark, what do you think about the VA? I mean, our guest from the Trump campaign was really trashing the VA. I have not gone. My dad went into the VA, but I, having not served in the military, I've never gone in. Tell us what your thoughts are about the VA.
Well, you know that I'm a 50% disabled veteran, and so. Not only do I have Medicare, but I also have VA care for those items that are, I try to make them service-connected. A lot of my disability is not service-connected. And frankly, I try not to use the VA to leave that slot open for somebody who doesn't have full medical coverage like I do as retired military, because not only do I have Medicare, but I have TRICARE for Life. I will tell you that in the last 6 months this year, I've been in the hospital twice. I've had three stents. I've had a colonoscopy and endoscopy, and my total payments for all of those procedures between Medicare and TRICARE for Life has been zero.
Wow.
And that's single-payer health care.
Yeah. Well, it's got to have peace of mind, too, that knowing that you have two options.
Three. I mean, I really could go to the VA if I had to.
Yeah.
I just don't like to take that slot away from somebody who might need it more than I do.
Oh, you're a good man. All right, Mark, thanks a lot. Thank you for that.
Yep, we'll talk to you later.
Take care. You know, if you've had experience with the VA, our guest thought that the VA and the unions representing VA employees were an impediment to health care. I'm just curious what you think. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Let's go to Dan in St. Pete. Hi, Dan. What are your thoughts?
Good morning. Rob, I'm wondering, like in Canada, if they have as many indigent people as we have in United States. And I think it's that taking care of the indigents that really dragged down our system. And I think in Canada, most everybody, you know, pulls the line and works.
I don't know. I don't have data on that. So I just don't know.
I know. Yeah. I mean, all the folks that go in for and have babies, they get everything free. You don't have any money. Man, in Canada, that doesn't happen. They're just, you know, they're more like Scandinavia, where everyone participates and pays taxes and works and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll have to look that up.
It's always towing the road for the folks that are looking for the freebies, is what I'm saying. Then I'll jump.
Okay. All right, Dan. I don't know what the real answer to that is because I don't have data, and I didn't look it up before the show. Let's go to Doug in St. Petersburg. Hi, Doug. You're on MNF. What's up?
Hi, Rob. This is Douglas, formerly Douglas of Clearwater, but I've been in the VA hospital since January. I had spinal surgery, and I don't have a service disconnected injury, and they're taking care of me. I wasn't able to catch the first part of your program because I was in physical therapy, and I got out, and I had patients on in my room. I have a private room. I get therapy twice a day. They feed me, and I can't complain one thing about the VA except that they're doing a fantastic job.
And you've been in for what, 5 or 6 months or 7 months?
Actually, I went in January to the emergency room, and the fantastic doctor there, Dr. Helm, had just come from Tampa General, and she sent me over to Tampa General that night for emergency surgery. Didn't happen until the following week. I had 3 surgeries from January, February, and March. March, I went to the VA, and I've been here ever since going through therapy. I really belong in Haley because of my spinal injuries, because of the program they have there. But because of COVID, I've been stuck here. But they've been working with me. I wasn't walking. I'm walking now. And it's just been fantastic. I have no complaints. But surprisingly, the only problems that we have a dining room area, and a lot of the vets want to look at Fox News, and I have a problem with that when I go in there. So that's the only problem that I've had.
All right. Well, Doug, thanks. I'm glad your recovery is going well, and thanks for that story from Bay Pines.
I'll be coming to volunteer.
All right. Thanks, Doug. Good to hear from you. And let's go to David in Lakeland, who wants to defend the VA. Hi, David. Thanks for calling in. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. Well, the lady that you had on your interview just was making blanket statements about the VA being a disaster and just everything negative, and that using that as an example for universal health care, how it would just automatically fail. I have found the VA. Now, I've been with them for 7 years. I'm healthy. I don't have any like bad conditions. They are as efficient as I have ever seen an organization run. If your appointment is at 11:45, you're going to get in at 11:45. And it is just amazing to me. It is how healthcare should be. And I have never talked to another veteran who has had anything negative to say about the VA.
And David, do you have to wait? I mean, if you call for an appointment, do you have to wait weeks and months, or tell us what kind?
Absolutely not. No, they will work you in, and that just depends on what it's for, you know. But never have I ever had, they'll be calling you, if you request an appointment, they'll be calling you the next day to schedule it.
Yeah,
and I would say the longest I ever had to wait for an appointment was 2 weeks.
Yeah. David, I'm sorry to say we're out of time, but thank you so much. I'm glad you made it through, and I wish we had time to take more phone calls. There are probably 50 emails in the queue here, and I'm sorry I haven't read them all. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. We'll have another one of the candidates for Congressional District 15 on the air tomorrow. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Bill Grace. He's been our phone producer today. This is WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and